This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run, 6 a.m. on Friday, the 10th of August. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning and guest hosting with us, Giri Balakrishnan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hello. Nice and chirpy on a Friday morning. I take it you guys are excited for the weekend.
Always. Always.
Always, always.
Friday is the best day of the week, I think.
Not Mondays?
No.
All right. Well, I apologize for starting the show on a somber note, but we would be remiss if we didn't catch you up on all the news that's important that happened overnight. In Yemen, we had 29 children killed in a Saudi-led airstrike, Saudi-led coalition airstrike there. So 29 children killed and 30 wounded. I believe the death toll currently stands at 43.
You know, under international humanitarian law, civilians must be protected during conflict. But how exactly do you do that? I mean, in war, how do you avoid this kind of collateral damage? And it's difficult to try and picture it. How do you specifically just attack only one area and avoid killing civilians, even children?
Right, that's right. And also, you know, keeping in mind the international coalitions or the international forces at play in this conflict over there in Yemen. You've got the Yemen government, you know, waging this war against the Houthis, and now they are saying that these actions are legitimate. So, you know, well, as the rest of the world watches, right, how do you digest the news here?
They're saying, so the Saudi-led coalition, they're backing the Yemen government, right? And they are Western-backed as well. So they're saying that the Houthis have used these children as human shields. So that's their justification for launching this airstrike. Whether that justification holds up, you know, has any credibility is another matter. But I do think it's important that we pay attention to what's happening in Yemen. It's been going on for 3 years, and often what happens is it gets relegated to the back pages of the world news because you know, there's a certain level of fatigue, there's a certain level of not happening in my backyard. But yeah, this is really important. And often when I speak to people, they tell me, you know, it's a complicated conflict. They don't understand who's fighting whom, over what reasons. But often that happens with war, right? Unless you have a human face on it, it's really difficult for you to imagine that this is happening on the other side of the world.
Right. Now, so it's imperative that we here at BFM and on the morning, or at least try to keep you up to date on these events, as complicated as they may be. Yeah, we try.
Yes, that's right. Well, also, there's another piece of news coming up from the Middle East. The British Museum now is looking to return artifacts that have been looted from Iraq following the fall of Saddam Hussein. These are 5,000-year-old artifacts. Apparently, they were seized by police from a now-defunct London dealer back in 2003, and they've been sitting with British authorities. But now they're saying, okay, we've established that these artifacts came from a site in southern Iraq, and now we want to return it to Iraq so that you can display it and be proud of your heritage.
Yeah, you know, this kind of story evokes imagery of an Indiana Jones, you know, wanting to return these artifacts to their rightful owners. And you recall
Wasn't Indy stealing it, though?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But, you know, a little bit off. It's not the perfect example, but that's the kind of imagery I have in my head.
Yeah, actually, in the British Museum, you'll notice that the collection is most representative of colonial grandeur. There's this whole thing of the colony and imperial conquest. However, at present, as we are hearing more and more about repatriation of these artifacts, the whole tone is actually changing. And so the idea of a universalized museum is actually gaining currency. So we may be seeing more and more of these returns taking place.
Definitely. And, you know, what to say, which artifact came from what country and who owns it, right? I do want to point out very quickly that if you go to the landing page of the BBC this morning, the headline reads, Malaysian Minister Orders Removal of LGBT Portraits from Exhibition. So thank you, Minister Mujahid Yusof Rawa, for ensuring that we've hit international headlines. You've also ensured that the photos of Pang Ki-taek and Nisha Ayub have been spread further and wider than previously possible.
Yeah, bad publicity is good publicity, at least for
maybe that was his ploy all along. Right. You know,
but given the benefit of the doubt,
Also, hashtag LGBT is trending on Twitter. So there you go. All right, it's coming up to 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. After this, we'll ask just how much would you sacrifice for the one you love? Next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 11 minutes past 6 o'clock. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and guest hosting with us, Giri Balakrishnan. That was Ain't Gonna Let You Go by Bonnie Raitt. Now, excuse me, it is 6 o'clock on a Friday. And my tongue hasn't gotten out with my brain yet.
No, your tongue is already on weekend mode.
It's ahead of all of us, I have to say. Well, we're looking over at Japan where there's a royal wedding set to be held, but she, Princess Mako, who is the eldest grandchild of Emperor Akihito, has decided to postpone her marriage. Now, the reason being is that the princess's parents, has asked her to do so because her fiancé's mother has an unresolved financial scandal.
So how much would you pay for the price of love? I mean, this is what the question is at the end of the day. That's a difficult question to answer. I suppose it depends on what situation you're in, whether you're a public figure or a very private individual. How much of your background is known publicly, then it puts a lot more pressure on the individual to show to the world, as it were. But again, it comes to a question of, do you really need to show to the world what you are? Can't you just be yourself what you need to do?
What do you mean?
So you need to be able to address your situations on your own without having to drag in the rest of the public into the picture as well. But in this case, because you're a public figure, I think it becomes a bit embarrassing, a bit more difficult.
Well, as the saying goes, right, you don't just marry the individual, you're marrying the family as well, right? I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah.
So in this case, I guess in terms of personal finance and financial management and perhaps a bit of a tinge of reputational risk, the princess appears to be appears to have a level head on her shoulders there. You know, until this debt situation gets resolved, you know, she might be putting off that marriage.
Well, I don't know whether this is coming from the princess and her fiancé per se. It could be coming from her parents. Yeah. So her parents may be looking to protect her and protect the royal family. However, Princess Mako, she's actually going to have to give up her royal status upon marriage because her fiancé is what they call a commoner. I hate that word, but the imperial family, any member of the imperial family in Japan, if they marry someone outside of the royal lineage, then they will have to give up their status.
Right, so that's for the princess's reality, right? But for the rest of us, how often have we heard about young people, you know, us commoners, how often have we heard of young people saying, putting off this idea of marriage until they are financially sound, right? So I think financial stability is a key pillar when it comes to marriage, and that is why I am still single.
And that's why you're the host of the show Ringgit and Sense.
I got my own issues to sort out. That's what it is.
That sounds like a really lame excuse, but yeah, we'll go with that for now.
No, why is that lame though? Because, you know, again, you hear about how fights over money, that is one of the leading causes when it comes to divorce. So you got to make sure that you have that sound financial footing before you jump into that lifelong commitment.
So I was speaking to a financial planner recently, and she said that so many young married couples come up to her and say that money woes are the source of all their arguments because they didn't have that conversation before entering marriage, right? They didn't sit down and say, well, I have this amount of debt, and then when you marry me, you've got to take on my debt as well as my love. And also kind of financial management of young people. We're not given, you know, the financial literacy that we should be at that level of going into marriage. But also coming back to Han, I just think he hasn't found a princess to marry yet. So his standards are very, very high.
Hey, I mean, judging by this story, it looks like Princess Mako is still on the market though. So she's putting out this marriage.
Yeah, it's always good to aim very high. Always very good to aim very high. But you know, there are these considerations when you do get involved in a marriage. At the end of the day, your responsibilities tend to change quite a significant amount. So there's a lot of give and take that takes place. So whatever lifestyles you were living as an individual, as a single person, would necessarily have to change because now you're sharing everything.
Right. And I've had this ingrained in me for the longest time as well, right? This idea of love, as you define it at the onset of your marriage, that may be fleeting. You want all these other pillars or foundations in place. Say, for example, shared values, shared commitment, making sure your financial circumstances are sound. All these things then allow for a more prosperous marriage.
Melissa is listening very intently.
I'm shaking my head because Han is the ever pragmatist when it comes to love.
That's my mother speaking through me right there.
All right, so what happens after marriage? You have kids, and what happens when you have gender stereotypes in your parenting? We should be talking about how to break those gender stereotypes, especially in assigning house chores. We'll discuss next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:21 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Giri Balakrishnan, guest hosting with us this morning. That was a great tune by Pearl Jam, Daughters. Now, what should you be teaching your daughters? Apparently, you should be evening out the housework between your daughters and your sons. Recent analysis of data from a chore app called Busy Kid showed that girls still spend more time on household chores than boys do. And they're also paid less than boys for doing chores, and they also have smaller allowances.
This thing goes back, I think, I don't know how many centuries, where the man was the one who was earning the income, the breadwinner, as it were, and the women were the ones who were taking care of the household. Things, of course, have changed quite significantly now because we've got both men and women in the workforce, and responsibilities have to be shared. You know, it's interesting. I think maybe men should take a day off and do what the wives do for a day to experience what they go through, and then there will be a better understanding of what the needs are.
Wait a minute. There are women who work and don't take the day off and still get all the housework done.
That's right.
So maybe don't take the day off and just take all the household chores.
Yeah. So that's what you call in sociology a dual burden, right? You have the career, your responsibilities at work to tend to, and then also not just the housework, but also, say, the emotional responsibilities that you have to play, that you have to fulfill as
nurturing,
wife, mother,
yeah,
right, nurturing, etc., right? So that's why you have this push for shared conjugal roles within the modern family. Obviously, like Giri pointed out, you know, we are trying to undo generations, eons of gender stereotypes, and it's not going to be settled overnight.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this and whether that, you know, just based on my personal experience, whether this is true. And growing up, you know, I had a big family in the kampung. My cousins, who were the same age as me, after dinner, they would get up and watch TV, or they would go out and have chat to their friends, and we would be left, the girls would be left to clean up the dishes and clean up the kitchen. And it's funny, you know, I never thought about that. It never registered until later when I realized, wait a minute, why can't he pick up his own plate and take it to the sink and wash it up? Because he goes there to wash his hands anyway. Why do I have to pick up his plate? And no one answered me why.
Right. Well, so I had a pretty different experience. I grew up in a family of 9 kids, 5 girls, 4 boys, and the girls totally ran the household. They were ordering us boys around, you know, like, you do this, you do that. We were at our sister's bid and call, you know, pretty much. Coming back to the modern day, right, how do we break these gender stereotypes? The idea is that children mirror what their parents do. So if these parents, live according to the stereotypes, or the dad comes home from work, puts his feet up, you know, reads the papers or whatever, and the mom is doing all the household chores, then that kind of lifestyle, those kind of roles are then mirrored by their children. So it looks like the parents would have to make that change first and live it before the kids can follow suit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think leading by example is probably the best way to educate the children, both male and female, as to how shared responsibilities makes the load lighter. And it also allows you to be able to live a complete life without being dependent on just one gender focused on particular kind of jobs. And then you sit back and relax kind of thing, as far as the male is concerned. So it doesn't really work in our current society, I think.
Apparently, looking at some of the chores under this chore app, boys are more likely to be paid. So this chore app actually gives money to kids who do chores. So boys are more likely to be paid for personal hygiene, like brushing your teeth and taking a shower, whereas girls are more likely to be paid for cleaning. And, you know, it's this unconscious bias, right? But what we want to do is, you know, in achieving equality, it's not just preparing girls for paid work, but it's for preparing boys for unpaid work. So you're teaching boys how to do that and shoulder some of that responsibility.
Man, if I got paid for every time I brush my teeth, good God, I'd be rich by now. Oh, come on. Where were my parents on that front?
Yeah, there was no busy kid app at that point in
right.
time.
No, okay, now, if we move this conversation further along, right? So if, let's say, you know, we are so accustomed to, say, you know, the women folk doing these household chores, and then by extension, we have female maids, right? Would there come a time where we could have male helpers at home to do all the work?
I've had a part-time cleaner who was male.
All right,
yeah,
how about that?
I actually was super proud of him. So well, I was like, yeah, good job. It's coming up to the 6:30 news, and we've got Arcade Fire to take you there with Ready to Start, right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning. If you've just joined us on the show, welcome. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han, and guest hosting this morning is Giri Balakrishnan. A great tune there by Journey, Any Way You Want It. And we're ready to give it to you any way you want it this morning. But thank you so much for weighing in on Twitter, joining our conversation. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, and you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Mr. Tan, thank you for your message. He agrees with us about our discussion on how to break gender stereotypes when it comes to household chores. Now, he says it's about time, guys and girls, he called me. This misogynistic nonsense has to stop, and we need to evolve because women outnumber us in the modern workplace. So we can't keep shortchanging female workers anymore. Please spread the word. We are trying very hard, Mr. Tan, exactly what we're doing this morning. Sharad Kutan weighing in on Twitter as well. He is up and awake despite no longer being on the Morning Run team. I think he's trying to rub it in our faces that he can wake up and go back to sleep if he needs to.
Well, maybe old habits die hard there. That's why, you know, he's inclined to wake up at this ungodly hour. Well, but for those of you who are awake and listening right now, we truly appreciate you tuning in and also joining in this conversation. But going back to Mr. Tan's comments, though, I think that ties in with the BFM acronym really well. So M can stand for misogynist, right? So like banning something misogynist. If you guys have any ideas there, you know, for completing that BFM acronym,
we can have a little contest going. If you can come up with the most creative acronym that will beat misogyny, feel free to write into us. We'd love to hear from you.
You get a gold star.
A gold star from Han.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to news that Pematang Power MP Nurul Izzah Anwar Shee has called on Parliament to follow the example of students and implement a National Kindness Week every year. So there was a student who suggested extending this National Kindness Week program, or it's trending hashtag stand together. So the student said, well, why not extend this to adults? And Nurul Izzah jumped on that idea. She said, what if we do a kindness week in Parliament?
I think this is actually a very good step in raising the awareness of how we should conduct ourselves. It's a bit strange to have to say it to adults, but this seems to have spread from your schooling days where you bully the weaker person or perceived weaker person, and it's dragged on to sort of put yourself in a position which is higher than the next person. So it sounds a bit childish to have to bring it to the front, but it is required because we see this bullying taking place even in our parliament.
Right, and I guess you're coming from a low base here, right? You got to have to try and roll out such a campaign, this
Don't
kindness
talk
weekend.
Don't talk about Bung Mukta like that.
I was going to say, right, you know, so make him the poster child for this kindness week in parliament. Let's
you mean
see how that
flies. Don't be like Bung? Oh. Well, okay, so I didn't know this, but in 2013, Singapore had a kindness movement. In fact, they had a graciousness index, which tracked the graciousness and kindness of Singaporeans. And apparently that year, it registered a sharp fall in graciousness and kindness. So they implemented this campaign to make sure that Singaporeans were kinder to each other.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if attaching these numbers and values and having these official campaigns actually devalues the act of kindness, because you want these acts of kindness to be genuine, to be spontaneous, right? That's what makes it meaningful. So if it's part of some orchestrated government campaign, then it almost seems, devalued.
No, but you don't think that, kindness campaigns, anti-bullying campaigns, you don't think they work?
Well, I mean, it's a bit tough, right? I mean, anti-bullying, you can see almost like this educational element there. There has to be this formal approach to it. But then when it comes to something as basic as kindness, you would like to think that us humans are already capable of doing that. Again, mirroring what our parents and other role models are doing in society, that you don't need this formalized campaign to do so.
Well, maybe putting it in more simple terms would be, treat the next person the way that you expect to be treated.
Yeah, golden rule.
If you're gonna treat a person, as a weaker individual and step all over them, I mean, surely there'll be somebody else who's going to be in a position to do the same thing to you. Is that the way you want to be treated? So maybe that should be the benchmark, rather than using an index or an indices of any sort to measure what your kindness level is.
But I think it serves as a mental reminder. You know what I mean? So my sister is the kindest human being I have ever met. She is such a lovely person. And when she was, I believe, 12 or 13 years old, she won the Anugerah Murid Penyayang, the most loving student, the sweetest student. I'm not sure how that translates into English, but that made an impact on her. It made an impact on her friends, because she was nominated by her friends and her teachers and her peers. And I do think there's something to be said about, encouraging kindness as encouraging kindness, making kindness a characteristic that we want to award and applaud.
Sure, of course, but again, I would think that there'd be plenty of avenues to do so, without having government orchestrated campaigns, right? And also, how will this actually play out in, say, Parliament? Because so often you want these robust debates. Can you have a robust, heated, intellectual debate based on principles without being unkind?
Well, yes, I think you can. Yeah. I think you can have a debate and still be kind. I think you can make a point and still be kind. I do think Parliament is a great place to start, because, just as you said earlier, we follow our parents' examples. Let's have our leaders treat each other with a little bit of respect first, and then perhaps that will trickle down. All right, tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. 6:46 right now. We're going to come back with a look at UKM's entry requirements for new students and why that's causing quite the stir on social media. Next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 Queen there with Princes of the Universe. Hello and good morning. I'm with two princes today. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han, and guest hosting with us, Giri Balakrishnan, right here on The Morning Run.
I'll take that, yeah.
Yeah, why not, right?
Nice compliment.
Yeah. 6:51 on the clock. And thank you everyone for weighing in on our conversations earlier this morning on breaking gender stereotypes in housework. We put out a call for you to come up with the best acronym for BFM, with M being misogyny. And we've got a whole load of people WhatsApping in and tweeting in. I'd like to give a shout out to Mel, who has suggested, what about breakaway from misogyny or big feminist movement, which is great. I love that. Also, we have Sharad Kutin weighing in. I wonder who that is. That name sounds familiar.
Don't know.
And he has suggested banish frustrating misogyny, which is great. Now, a quick mention on WhatsApp. We have Intan Sabrina Muhammad, who wanted to comment on our discussion about the proposed Kindness Week in Parliament. Now, she cited the Rukun Negara, because guys, I forgot about this. Yeah. The Rukun Negara says that kesopanan dan kesusilaan is part of it. So if only MPs adhere to the Rukun Negara, then none of this would have been a problem.
Right, and another point I was going to make on that, this whole idea of a kindness week, right? Then it shouldn't just be a week, eh? It should be something that's sustained, ingrained into our culture, mm-hmm. as per the Rukun Negara. So beyond kindness week, it should just be kindness forever, really.
Yeah, exactly. Don't just keep it at a week for sure.
Well, yeah, that Bung Mota.
Yeah, that was a shout out to Bung, wasn't it? Okay, well, let's move on to UKM because they're making quite the stir on social media. This is University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Their entry requirements for new students have sparked some mixed feelings. Now, apparently, there's a list of entry requirements that states that applicants must record 3 short videos, each lasting no more than 120 seconds, that's about 2 minutes, and then upload it to their personal Instagram or Facebook profiles. Now, they have to have one video to share their hopes and aspirations if they are successful in becoming an applicant or a student in UKM. And the second video has to show an interview with a UKM alumni. So there you go. That's causing quite the stir on social media. There's a bit of a backlash from that.
Yeah, the content of the videos is one thing, but just to be able to put yourself up in front of a camera and record yourself doing something, that in itself would be a great deal of pressure on a student. I mean, you're applying for a university. That's pressure enough. And then on top of that, you've got this to do. And to add to this, hopes and aspirations. And many students get into universities, I believe, with the hope of, okay, we get a degree, we come out, then we look for a job. They don't necessarily have a fixed job in their mind in many cases.
Yeah, but it's not just that, right? It's the fact that this feels like a publicity stunt because they've given all these hashtags, you know, and then they've asked students to upload these profiles to their personal Instagram accounts. I feel like it's widening that divide between urban and rural and those that have and have not, and the digital divide, right? What if you don't have a smartphone? What if you don't have a video camera or, you know, what if you don't have an Instagram account, if you're not connected that way?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess for the Malaysian context, look, with the mobile phone penetration rate here in Malaysia being pretty high, at least, you know, higher than our regional peers, that factor may be mitigated somewhat. I think, you know, to put a positive spin to this, it could be, you know, killing two birds with one stone. Because on one hand, right, how often have we lamented how university graduates, local university graduates, don't have the confidence when it comes to public speaking. They lack their presentation skills, and etc. So this could be a great launching pad for them to really put themselves out there and, you know, hopefully gain university entry there. Now, fine, I can see some of the criticisms whereby this is raising the bar mm-hmm. when it comes to entrance into that university. But if the university can save some money there via publicity and it gives a platform for these kids to put themselves out there, then sure, why not?
Yeah, that idea of getting confidence in public speaking and so on and so forth, they also require you to actually have an interview with one of the alumni. So, you know, it's a matter of the students actually going up and looking for these people, sitting with them, having a conversation about their experiences in university. I mean, it's a win-win situation
in both. Right.
What if you are the first in your family to go to university? What if you come from a really rural area and you don't have access the way that urban kids have access?
Sure. No, then, again, well, I don't know whether these applications are I would think that nowadays university applications are done online. Anyways, if not, I'm sure they can find help when they go to meet that university admissions official.
Are video resumes a thing now? I always thought it was like a reality show. Like, you know, I want to join The Amazing Race or I want to join Survivor, and you send in a video resume. Is it becoming a thing where you send your CV via video, via CD, via thumb drive, whatever it is, Dropbox it?
Yeah, I will say this though, you know, it definitely sets you apart. Right, because all these HR guys, they just get stacks and stacks of papers or just this very boring PDFs. But if you send this link where your CV is a 30-second video featuring you, it's definitely going to stand out. Now, I remember when I was first taking my first steps in the rat race and trying to get my portfolio out there, I recall handing CDs out to these recruiters, right? And they would actually ask me on the spot, you should have brought a CD player as well, one of those mobile DVD players, so that way I can watch it right on the spot. They want it instantaneous. They want somebody who can think two steps ahead. And I think these measures will allow applicants to do just that.
Khan, you've turned yourself into a product.
Maybe.
Well, thank you so much to Anwar Anis and Ravi Kumar for weighing in on WhatsApp. We've got the 7 o'clock news coming up in just 2 minutes, so stay tuned right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.